What's up, guys? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Widow Wednesday, December 6th, 2017. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, and yes, I am joined by Gary Widow because it is Widow Wednesdays, and of course, I had to wear my Star Wars shirt. He has a Star Wars shirt.
My Star Wars Christmas sweater.
Yeah. So Mary Widow right now, right?
Mary Widow currently, through the month of December. That's right.
It's an exciting time to be alive. I'm excited. This is the first time I've done a show with you.
This is an untested combo. Yeah, who knows what could happen?
Yeah, we'll have to see. I gathered all the news stories. You haven't even really, you've saw them a little bit, but our printer is broken.
We don't even have show notes today. Yeah. So you're working off an iPhone. I got nothing.
Which I
got
to say, I love the iPhone 10s. Screen real estate.
It helps to have that extra screen, doesn't it?
It's nice.
But we are still very much kind of working without a net here. And again, we've not worked together before. So, this could be a train wreck.
Who knows? Stay tuned for the Kind of Funny train
wreck. Can I just say that this look that you're rocking right now, I like it a lot.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
If you were on the internet and there was a button that said, like, get this look, I'd be clicking on that. I'd be stabbing that button.
You can go to Target. This is a $10 shirt.
The jacket's good. I mean, the whole thing is good.
Yeah. Good. Greg Miller was wondering if he should adopt this jacket look. And I'm like, you should do it.
That's a Target t-shirt?
Target t-shirt.
I haven't seen that. I'm going to keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I like
this
it.
This is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday, we get together right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames and talk about all the nerdy video game news that you need to know about. You can get it later on podcast services around the globe or on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Pretty much any way you want to get it, it's available for you, and it's going to be great. If you want to be part of the show, you can go to kindoffunny.com/KFGD to write in, leave some questions, just like a whole bunch of beautiful people did. And during the show, you got to keep us honest. Go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong to let us know if we get anything wrong during the show, and since I'm on the show, we probably will. So I'm gonna need you to be on top of me, capitalist pig. I know you're a good dude. No, you're out there listening, right? Cool, Greg.
Yeah.
Cool, Greg knows what I'm talking about. But now it's time to start with the housekeeping. You thought I was going to go to the Roper Report? I want to keep people on their toes, Gary.
You are. I mean, I'm certainly feeling on my toes. I have no idea what's going to happen right now.
It's crazy.
It's got me like. Yeah. On tenterhooks. I feel like anything's possible right now.
So we're going to start off with, for the final time, telling people to vote for Andrew Renee for Trending Game of the Year.
Oh, that's right, because the Game Awards are what, this weekend?
They're Thursday.
Thursday.
But the voting ends today, so it is your last chance.
Today's the last time.
Vote. Please get your votes in. Every vote counts. You can go to Google, just type in Trending Gamer Vote. Andrew Renee's beautiful picture pops up. You click on that thing. You're doing God's work. It's going to be fun. Have you been voting for Andrew Renee?
I did vote.
I appreciate that. You can vote every day. Today's your
last chance. But my vote, you know, I feel like that's between me and the ballot box.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's true. We don't want to get too political out here. And then we are also doing a watch along of the Game Awards on Thursday night. It'll be me and Andy Cortez. I imagine that Joey Noel will be around somewhere. Cool Greg will be there. Greg Miller will be down at the Game Awards schmoozing, because that's what he does. He's one of those hobnobbers.
He's going to be schmoozing and hobnobbing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much his shtick. Right?
It is his shtick,
for sure. That's his strength.
And then he's also going to be down at PSX. He's hosting the Uncharted 10th Anniversary panel. That's really cool. All the voice actors from the franchise will be there. That's going to be a lot of fun. And in addition to that, he's doing an interview with Shuhei Yoshida and Sean Layden. That's very exciting. Will some news come out of that? I don't know. No one briefs me on anything, but I imagine it'll be kind of fun. And in new news that just came out today, Greg Miller is once again hosting the DICE Awards.
I just saw that, yeah.
Yeah, the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences, the AIAS, is pleased to announce the return of the co-host for the 21st DICE Awards ceremony. Greg Miller, co-founder of Internet Video and Podcast Network Kind of Funny, that's us, and Jessica Chobot of Nerdist News, the DICE Awards serve to recognize excellence among peers currently working in games. The award ceremony will close the three-day DICE Summit on the evening of Thursday, February 22nd, 2018 in Las Vegas. If you want, you can buy tickets to go there, or there will be a stream where you get to see them host. Last year, Mike Drucker wrote it, and it was really funny. Greg did a really good job. Jess did a really good job. Seeing them together was nice.
Oh, so they have hosted together before?
Last year, they did. Okay. Yeah.
Well, they must have done a good job, because they got asked back.
Yeah, and it was their IGN reunion. It was pretty nice.
Oh, that's right. Both formerly of IGN.
Yeah, they hadn't done something together for a while, so that was pretty cool. But now it's time to get into what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. Today we have three news stories.
A baker's dozen.
Thank you for that. First one, this comes from IGN. PUBG's second map named and detailed. PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds' desert-based second map is called Miramar, and we've learned some other new details about it. In a blog post on the PUBG Steam page, PUBG Corporation revealed that Miramar is a new desert environment that has been designed in the opposite direction to PUBG's original map, Arangel. I think that's how you say that. Replacing the map's lush greenery with a desert terrain and densely populated urban areas. Within the map are several new locations, including Los Leones, the largest city in the region, filled with construction sites and abandoned commercial buildings, as well as Montenuvo, the picture of a town beside. The picture, you can see the picture on IGN. Valle del Mar, a colorful oceanside town, and San Martin, a war zone. As well as teasing more locations than the ones listed in the post, PUBG Corporation makes it clear that it expects Miramar to require a very different style of play to the original map, warning that old strategies may no longer work and new tactics are required. PUBG Corporation promises that players will be able to play in Miramar during the final test round before PUBG 1.0 launches, although no further details are given. It is launching on December 12th, so that doesn't give them too much time.
No, but they have been working on it for a long time. There have been, you know, work in progress images and blog posts about these additional maps for a while. So we're finally getting them.
I imagine that we will see more of this at the Game Awards on Thursday, and probably an announcement of people being able to play the map around that.
Well, so the new map and the Xbox version, they're both the same day. So that's a big day for PUBG.
Yeah, exactly. And if they're saying that people will be able to play it before like the final test rounds, you imagine that's in the next 6 days. So it's very exciting news.
I'm excited. I feel like this is, you know, PUBG's been out there for a while now. Mm-hmm. And it's got quite a mature player base. And a lot of players know every pixel on that map. And they know how to use every inch of that terrain. So a new map right now, it's the perfect time to breathe some new life into the game. You know, everyone's going to have to start over with a map that nobody knows that well. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, if they've done their job well, which I'm sure they have, they're very good. Look at the basic island map they have right now. It's a very well-designed map. That this new map, hopefully... I mean, nice, even just as a new coat of paint, a kind of a desert map is a very cool look, a different look. But I'm hoping that what they have done is, and it seems like just from what you were talking about, this is what they have done, is try to design it in a way that is going to encourage people to, they're going to need to develop new tactics.
Yeah.
What worked on Arangel, however you pronounce it, is not necessarily going to work here.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping different kinds of encounters, different kinds of battles and tactics. Mm-hmm. I think, again, just what the game needs right now is
something fresh and different.
Something fresh, yeah, to force especially, people to kind of relearn stuff.
Yeah, especially after Fortnite Battle Royale came out and so many people played that in addition to PUBG, and I feel like that has a similar playing style, but it added the different elements of having to build your base and all that. I think that having different ideas in it, it seems like they definitely have something up their sleeve that makes this map different and unique in its own way.
Yeah, like more kind of dense urban areas, you know, kind of close quarter, kind of house-to-house combat where there could be someone around every corner,
yeah.
You know, the island map in PUBG is mostly pretty open. There are a couple little apartment blocks and things like that, but for the most part it's pretty open. And I think maybe what they're looking for here is like areas of like higher density, which again tactically will be different and interesting. The one I'm really excited about is the one behind this, which is the Arctic tundra kind of map. I think will be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting that the game's finally going into its, you know, full release, and with the new map, that's going to be great, and with console, that's going to be super great too. I'm going to open the game up to so many people that just, you know, aren't PC gamers. I know people like Greg especially are going to jump back into it and give it more of a shot than he has previously.
I was playing it obsessively because when I was first introduced to it, like, I just, it was like the deepest I've gone into a game. You know when a game comes along and you just like fall deep down the rabbit hole right away because it just grabs you so quickly? That was me in PUBG. So I was playing it like for hours almost every day, every evening. I was loving it. And then I got to a point where I started to get busy again and I couldn't spend as much time with it. Plus I kind of felt like I was just kind of falling behind the competitiveness curve. Like, I'm just not good enough to really enjoy. Like, you will get murdered in that game, mercilessly, brutally murdered every which way if you don't, you know, keep that up. Competitive edge. But between the new map and the Xbox version, which I'm very keen to try, this is definitely going to bring me back to the game.
Do you think the console version is going to be where you're more comfortable, or are you more on the PC side?
I do like the PC side. You know, obviously with shooters, you know, I think mouse and keyboard is always, you know, kind of the best way to play a game. Most accuracy, most, you know, ability, you know, a whole kind of keyboard of controls, and you can map them out any way you like pro players, and that's always where that's going to be their first choice. What I like about the controller version potentially is for people that do find that version a little intimidating, maybe a little easier to kind of get your head around the controls. I'd be very interested to see how they have taken a shooter, which is so, like, this is, you know, PUBG is not a pray and spray game, right? It's a pinpoint accuracy shooter. And so how they have translated that to a controller, which is by its nature less precise. Very interested to see how that works.
Yeah, me too. I grew up with consoles and I can play on PC, but I'm not good at it. And my hands always cramp up because I feel like I'm not properly using the keyboard and all that. So I'm excited to play this game, not only on a controller, but on a TV as well. Like just being able to sit on my couch and play on the big screen is going to be a lot of fun.
One other thing that I think the Xbox version will have going for it is hopefully less prone to cheating and exploits. That's an issue that's still struggling with, even with Battleline and all the technology and all the kind of the diligence they're putting into trying to stamp out cheaters, because cheaters are scum. They don't belong in video games. I loathe them. They should not be in games. And I support, you know, zero tolerance measures towards cheaters. It is, you know, by its nature, because it's more of a closed platform. It's harder to cheat on console games than it is on PC games. And so hopefully that means that you can at least go, like right now, it's actually another reason why I don't necessarily want to play the PC version so much is I keep hearing all the time about the cheating problems they're having. And when they get ahead of those, again, I suck even on a level playing field. If you're going to cheat, I've got no chance at all. So the Xbox version, hopefully being able to go into that thinking, well, if I get killed, at least they killed me fairly. I don't have to worry about that guy, you know, being invincible or warping around the map or whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll be more comfortable there. We'll see.
Yeah. Do you have an Xbox One X?
Yes, I do.
How's it been treating you?
I love it. Yeah. It's been very, very, very... I talked to Greg about it a couple of times. It's I haven't really kind of really put it through its paces yet, but the few games I have played on it, when you go into 4K, the razor sharp, you know, image nature of it is on a good display. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Mm. Yeah,
I was playing Halo 5 in 4K at 60 frames a second. Completely different experience to the previous version.
I need to see it. I think it's definitely one of those seeing is believing type situations.
For me, 60 frames a second is where it's at. 4K is nice. HDR is nice. But when you go from 30 to 60... Just the fluidity of the imagery, like you notice it, you go like, whoa, what is that? It's kind of like when motion smoothing's turned on a TV, but like good, as opposed to making you hate it and think like $200 million movies.
Best Buy employees, why don't you turn it off?
Turn it off. But it's on by default, isn't it? That's the problem. Out of the box, so you have to go into the menus to turn it off.
I'm happy that so many people hate it though. Like I'm happy that like I feel like it's the default to be like, this looks wrong.
But there are people out there that like it. When you go to someone else's house and they have it on. I will, if the Ryan Johnson calls this TV ninja, that when someone, if they leave the room, quickly grab the remote and like do them a favor, turn it off for them.
I have a theory that I feel like it's not that they like it. They think it's better because it's different. They see it and they're like, oh, this must be a different technology, so this must be better.
But anyone who's seen a movie at the theaters knows the way that movies are supposed to look. This happened when Peter Jackson
The Hobbit
shot those Hobbit movies in that 48 frames per second, and everybody said it looked
horrible.
It's weird the effect that it has, and it doesn't just make it look like it was shot on video, but it also looks like suddenly everything looks fake, right? You can see, oh, that's just a cardboard set.
Yeah.
That doesn't look like a real castle or whatever. It just looks like a fake set. And it's amazing how that frame rate difference exposes all of the fakeness of Hollywood. Like when you're on a real movie set, you look at everything and go like, oh, this is actually kind of cheap and plasticky. And this doesn't look as good as you thought it would. That's less true on Star Wars because everything there is built to such a high level. It's like, oh shit, this stuff does look amazing. But on a lot of movies or especially on TV shows, like you go, oh, this is actually really. I remember years and years and years ago, I was on the Paramount lot and we snuck onto the Voyager set. And I snuck onto the bridge because it was still up at the time. And I sat in the chair and I'm thinking, oh, this is actually really kind of shitty. Like, and nothing chintzy. Looks good. Yeah, it's also plastic and fake. But something happens when you light it and you put it through a camera lens. Some kind of magic happens and it becomes kind of quote unquote real. But then when you do the 48 frames a second or the motion smoothing, whatever that is, it somehow turns it back into looking fake again.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I remember the very first time I saw it, I was in as you said, I was in a Best Buy, and it was running this. It was a big TV, and it was running a
Transformers.
It was like a sizzle reel of all these different things. It was Peter Jackson's King Kong, Fast and Furious, Transformers, a whole bunch of like you know high octane mega budget stuff. But I was watching it, and this is before I understood what motion smoothing was, and I just remember looking for the first time, going, something's wrong. Why does this look so cheap?
Yeah.
Why does it look so bad? Why does it look like this $100 million movie was shot on the, you know, Days of Our Lives set?
Well,
and it's this motion smoothing thing.
When
it destroys
CG
it.
Too, because the CG, yeah, like, they can't match the movement animations to it perfectly with the frames per second that they're playing back the,
yeah,
the video at.
Yeah.
And it creates this weird thing where it does look like it's just being put on top of the image, like layered. Like you can start to see the layers break down, and that's where it gets really weird.
Yeah.
I got talking about the chintzy sets, like we just shot a Disney commercial down in LA.
Uh-huh.
And when you see the final thing, it's like, oh my God, this looks like this epic arena, and like the colors and everything looks perfect. But when you're there, it's like, oh man, this looks, there's like tape everywhere.
Yeah. And you realize how much smaller everything is than it looks on TV. Like you think you're on some epic set and you go there and it's like, oh, this is tiny.
Oh, it's a tiny little room. Yeah. It was pretty nuts. And it's crazy too that somehow they just found that magic. The 24 frames per second just tricks your mind into understanding this is a different world. And when it comes to film and like when you're into it, it does hide all of those weird little, you know, tricks, like Hollywood tricks. And when you start playing around with the frame rate, that's when it gets all messed up. And that's why sports look so good in 60, because it's supposed to be real life.
Right.
You know, and you're supposed to see it's all about
the
motion. I
think that's the one thing that it's good for is sports. And video games,
and video
of course.
Games. Yeah.
But for live action TV and even animation, like even watch like a Pixar animated movie, even that looks weirdly wrong when it's motion smoothed or at a higher frame rate. It just looks horrible.
Yeah. Man, very interesting.
What do you think? What are the ethics of that, Tim? If you're at a friend's house or a family member.
Do it. You got to do it.
And you see that they've got the motion smoothing on. They leave the room. The remote's right there. You do it.
Yeah, I mean,
do you take matters into your own hands?
I would probably tell them about it. I don't know that I would ninja it, though. But people get all weird about like you touching their stuff, which I get. I totally get. But it's like, especially when you start fixing and changing them into like, I like it like that. And I'm like, no, just trust
well,
me.
That's why I would do it behind their backs.
Yeah.
And if they come back into the room and then they say, something looks weird. Like, what happened to the image? It looks wrong. If they say that, then I would probably say, I'll change it back. But like, you've got to do it. Because
I feel like you're a better friend than me then. Because I feel like I would have to tell them. I'd feel bad about it. Whereas you're actually going to better their lives.
Well, there's no good. It's kind of like giving someone else parenting tips. Like nobody wants to be told that stuff. Like, you know, you should hold your baby this way or that way. It's like, there's no way to do it in a way that doesn't seem like patronizing condescending. So, you're not actually supposed to be watching it that way. Like I would hate you for telling me that. I don't want to be told things.
Yeah.
But it is one of those areas where there is an indisputable right and wrong. I'd be very interested to hear from anyone who actually has their TV on motion smooth and prefers knows what it is and actually prefers
it's
it
like
that
an
way.
Enthusiast for that horrible thing. If you're in there, write in thekindoffunny.com/KFGD and tell us that you're a crazy person. Second news story of the day. This comes from Kotaku. Pokemon Go gets 50 new monsters and an intense weather system. Niantic has begun its rollout of the third generation of monsters in Pokemon Go with 50 critters from the Hoenn region and more slated to come later in the year. They're from Ruby and Sapphire. More surprisingly, though, is that Pokemon Go is about to require going out into the rain and snow to capture every monster, thanks to a new weather system. As trainers are exploring the world around them in search of Pokemon, the current weather in their vicinity will be visible on the in-game map. The real-world weather around trainers will impact the gameplay of Pokemon Go in a variety of ways that include changing Pokemon habitats and where they can be found, increasing combat power, and earning more Stardust after catching a Pokemon. Ace trainers can take advantage of their climates to level up their Pokemon Go experience. There's a bunch of stuff that doesn't matter here. As the seasons change, they'll encounter different Pokemon, thereby keeping their gameplay experience fresh. Whether they're looking for the largest Wailord at a beach, chasing Swablu blowing on the wind, battling alongside their Salamence, or making their Phoebus feel beautiful, players will know that as sure as the seasons change, Hoenn Pokemon have arrived. Rainy days just got more interesting, blah, blah, blah. I think this is really cool. It's good that they're still supporting this game and that they do have such a large library of Pokemon to just keep adding more and more, so people like Andrew Goldfarb will have something to do for the rest of their lives. But the weather thing is it's a cool addition, and I wonder what the next kind of augmented reality hit is going to be now that they know all this stuff. Because, you know, when Pokemon Go first came out, it was a little light on content and,
right,
and being able to do things. And it was definitely a phenomenon, and everybody that took part in it loved it, everybody that didn't hated it, but now over the last like 2 years they've added so much to it, and there's battles, there's trading, there's all this stuff that I'm excited to see what the next generation of this could look like.
I think it's potentially very interesting. I like, I'm in two minds about it. I like the idea of really testing your mettle here. Like, how much do you really want this Pokemon? Are you willing to go out in the driving rain or in the middle of a snowstorm? Because those are the only conditions that you're going to catch this Pokemon in. On the other hand, how the clock ticking down to first kid found dead in a snowstorm because they went out looking for this Pokemon.
Yeah.
You know, they already have enough problems with, you know, Pokemon Go accidentally steering people into traffic or into, you know, dangerous areas and stuff. They've already had that whole news cycle.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is potentially leading to that again. And also, what does it mean if you live in Arizona or New Mexico or someplace like that? Are you just never going to find a snowy Pokemon?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a lot of it's gonna affect the Pokemon and like just maybe like how often they're found in different places. And
okay.
All that. And there already is region specific ones that we've seen.
Right.
I feel like they do events to kind of like help people that aren't in those specific places. But I haven't played Pokemon Go in at least over a year, if not more.
No, when it first came out, the whole family was excited about it, but it dropped off very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And again, I remember when it first came out, you could see like huge crowds of people
everywhere.
Congregated around Pokestops. That's for the most part
gone.
Over with, right?
Yeah.
But I do admire, again, the people that will head out into the rain, more power to them. I take my hat off to them if they can get those, if they're willing to do things to get those Pokemon that others are not, by all means.
Yeah, definitely. And then the final news story of the day, this comes from Reset Era. It's not so much a news story, it's just I think it's interesting. There was a post by a user that said, I straight up do not understand how people keep thinking that some huge new game is going to be announced at the Game Awards. The last time they ever had a real reveal of a huge game was when the show was still backed by Spike. Ever since Keeley decided to go out on his own, the show has never had a huge reveal. The only reveals tend to be of indie games, ports, or updates to games we know exist. And of course, this year is following that trend. 13 reveals, and like 4 of them have already been confirmed of being about games we already know exist. People who think Devil May Cry 5 is going to be here are nuts. The leak said the games announced was delayed to E3 2018, so Sony's E3 could be stacked. I doubt they can change that decision / scheduling in a matter of weeks. Jeff Keighley himself responds, see you tomorrow night, my friend, which I enjoy a lot. Someone else then replies, Jeff, you don't have AAA game announcements. And then Jeff replies with a gif that's just the owl, the oh really. So we're getting some big AAA game reveals.
So he's saying that he does have it.
Yeah. I mean, and I love that he's on Reset Era and he is just getting in the weeds with these guys.
Is that true that the big game reveals went away after Jeff went on his own? It was no longer Spike?
It's not so, well, in terms of huge AAA game announcement, because during Spike Game Awards, whatever they were called, Last of Us was debuted. We
right.
haven't had something of that.
But how long?
Scale.
So how many years has Jeff now been doing this in the post Spike era?
On his own, I want to say 3.
Right, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
I'm sure your wrong will tell us.
Yeah, they
are.
Will, because I feel like there was the VGX happened, and that was I think the last one on where there was still Spike funny, but it wasn't like the video game awards.
Well, it wasn't
anymore.
Like Death Stranding revealed at one of these.
It wasn't
ceremonies?
Revealed, but it was at the Game Awards last year. There was the second trailer for it, or the second CG kind of video for it, and that's where
right.
they revealed Guillermo del Toro and Mads Mikkelsen.
Right. So I mean, that to me counts as one of those big reveals. That was a big deal.
Yeah, definitely. But I think that they're insinuating that there is a AAA game reveal.
Oh, like something we didn't even know was coming.
Yeah, something we didn't know at all. And a lot of people have been talking about Devil May Cry 5. And with PlayStation not doing a proper conference at PSX, Devil May Cry 5, there was a leak that came out that they're referencing here. The leak does talk about E3 being where it's going to be revealed. Devil May Cry 5 at this point has to be real. There's been so much that has leaked from different places and people talking about it. I'm really excited about it. Rumors being that it's a PlayStation exclusive, and that would have made a lot of sense at PSX. But since it can't be there, Game Awards could work for it.
Well, Jeff, you're certainly talking a big game. Let's see.
Yeah, we'll have to see. So Thursday, place your bets. Let's see what happens. I'm very excited about
because
it.
Because if it turns out that he doesn't have something.
Oh, that's going to be
or
bad.
It's underwhelming, that's going to backfire.
Yeah.
So I got to feel like he would not.
He wouldn't do this.
He would not
if
be representing
know.
Cards he doesn't have.
Yeah.
I think he's got the cards.
I've been talking to a lot of just random people about the Game Awards on the inside and just trying to see who knows what. And I haven't got anything too juicy, but everything that my people have told me is that there is a lot of conversations happening that are big conversations that aren't locked in yet. That there's a lot of questions that day of the Game Awards are going to be decided of whether or not they're allowed to show it. So, and that's like big stuff even from Xbox and Nintendo. So,
I hope that Jeff hasn't banked on that, because what if they pull the rug out from under him at the last
I'm
second?
I'm sure he has something.
No, he's got to have something he knows
is locked
in.
There has to be at least one thing he can be like, point to and
that's
be like, this
in.
Is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Who's hosting?
Him.
He hosts.
He always hosts them. Right. Yeah. And then there's a bunch of presenters, and they've been announcing them over the last week. I think Aisha Tyler's there, Norman Reedus, Hideo Kojima, Justin Roiland from Rick and Morty. Mm-hmm. So it should be a fun show. I've heard extremely cool things about their musical segments. Well,
they usually do the big orchestral numbers, don't they?
Yeah, and they're
like the symphonic.
I heard there's going to be a crazy 2017 video game medley. With a live orchestra that's going to be super, super cool.
And it's not on TV, right? You watch it live on YouTube? Or how do you watch
it? You watch it live on any of the internet providers, Twitch, YouTube, it'll be on IGN.
Right.
Like, Jeff's whole philosophy with this is like, let's get it out to the most people possible. So it's like any video game site with a video player is going to be streaming this thing on Thursday. So it is exciting. So Drafting Dave wrote in and he says, so Greg's not here, but I'm going to read this anyway. Greg, I know you're just trying to be funny, bashing mattress stores, but the jokes hit a little too close to home for me. The holidays are especially tough for me, and these mattress store jokes are not helping. In 2015, my father and I wanted to surprise my mom with a much-needed mattress upgrade. Since we were on a very limited budget, we went to the store looking for the best deal for a decent mattress. After a very long day of searching, we arrive at the final store, going through another sales pitch about a mattress that would take 3 years to pay off. Finally, realizing we weren't interested, the salesman pointed us to the back warehouse where the clearance stock was stored. Unassisted, we tried to find the best mattress in this hellhole of a misplaced, highly stacked, OSHA hell of a mattress warehouse. Lo and behold, atop a large stack of forgotten stock, we see an 80% off Stearns & Foster mattress. My father boosted me up so that I could check the size and price. As I fumbled around the Jenga-style stack of mattresses, I started to lose my balance. Down came the whole pile, right on top of my father, slamming him against the hard cement warehouse floor. To this day, his last words still haunt me. As he lay there, slowly bleeding out, he whispered, "Hey, I know your mom's looking forward to the new Spider-Man, but if she wanted to know what's out today, where would she go? Had I known about Lisa, my father would still be alive today. So don't kill your father. Buy a Lisa mattress today." P.S. Kids love boxes just as much, if not more, than cats. We are sponsored by Lisa. We'll get to that later. But if you wanted to know where video games are coming out, you can check out the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday. It's when you do the song. Cool, Greg. You're right. Yeah. We got a couple games out
that
today.
I enjoyed the Shyamalan twist at the end there.
Yeah.
It was good.
Didn't see that one coming.
No, it was good.
That might be my favorite thing about this show is when I start reading a question and it turns out to be one of those, the twist about the where games are available. Because today I started reading that. I'm like, is this guy seriously?
I read it before the show and I was like, oh my God, this guy's got, it was quite well done. It's like, this guy's got a real story to tell.
Yeah.
And then the twist at the end legitimately got me.
Yeah, it was good.
Again, fair play to the guy.
Out today, Chaos on Deponia. No idea what that is. On Xbox One and PS4. Also out is Jak 2, Jak 3, Jak X Combat Racing on PlayStation 4. Those are all PS2 classics. And also out today is the PS2 Dynamic Theme on PlayStation 4. And it is awesome. Have you seen this thing?
No. What is that?
You know the themes on PlayStation 4?
Yeah, of course.
It's styled after the PlayStation 2. Like load up and boot up and everything.
Oh,
and
they went a little retro.
Yeah, and they went real far into it where it has the same sound effects and everything. And there's that ring in the back. And it's even when you go into the different menus, it looks like PS2 did. And it's really, really
cool. Is that free?
Cool. It's $3.99, I think.
Oh,
yeah.
I like it, but I don't want to pay for it.
It's really cool, though. There's YouTube videos. You should
check it
out.
Okay, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Then Square Boy versus Bullies Arena Edition is out on PlayStation 4.
I've never heard of any of these games.
Well, Jack.
Jack?
Jack and Daxter.
Oh, Jack and Daxter. Okay, I've heard of Jack and. When did you say Jack? I'm not on first name terms with Jack and Daxter.
I'm pretty sure Jack and Daxter was only the name of the first one. Then after that, it was just Jack. Yeah.
I didn't even know it was still going.
Yeah. Well, the PS2 games brought over to PS3.
Oh, but that's what it is. Okay.
Or PS4.
Man, we really are like the dreg end of the year's releases, aren't we? This is pretty much all that's left.
Square Boy versus Bullies Arena Edition on PS4, Rememoried on Xbox One, Demon's Age on Xbox One, and A Hat in Time on PS4 and Xbox One, a delightful little platform you should check out.
What's that one?
A Hat in Time. It's inspired by Mario 64. It's an indie platformer game.
But okay.
Yeah, it's getting good reviews.
Cool.
And then finally, WWE 2K18 finally coming out on Switch today.
Today?
Yeah, today.
Oh, shit. That's cool. Tom
Buck
hit me up about that.
Yeah. Yeah, so out today. And then we got a whole bunch of new dates today, a whole bunch of new games announced. The third and final episode of prequel series Life is Strange Before the Storm, entitled Hell is Empty, will be available on December 20th. For PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC.
It sounds like a festive fun.
I'm sure Greg's going to love it.
For the holiday season. Hell is empty.
Get right in there. And today, indie studio Head Up Games announced a surprise standalone spinoff of its Bridge Constructor series, which will take place in the Portal universe.
What?
Yeah. Bridge Constructor Portal will blend the laws of structural engineering and technology straight from Aperture Laboratories into an exciting new game experience, all under the demanding gaze of GLaDOS. Bridge Constructor Portal is coming to PC, iOS, and Android on December 20th.
So this is all officially Valve, officially sanctioned?
Yep. Coming to
PC.
Why
wasn't that the number one story of the day? That's awesome.
It's coming to PC, iOS, and Android on December 20th with a console version slated for early next year.
Oh my God, so not only does this thing exist, but it's like right around
the
corner.
Yeah, very
soon. Did we even know this was coming?
No, it was just announced today.
Wow.
Yeah, but have you played the Bridge Constructor games?
Yeah, I love where you build the bridge and then somebody has to...
I'm not familiar with this.
Well, if it's the kind of games that I used to play back in the day, it's kind of engineering similar. You build a bridge using the components at your disposal, and real physics and everything plays a part, and then the bridge has to be able to remain standing, structurally sound, and then the real test is usually that you have to ride like a truck or a train across it, and it has to take the weight and not collapse. I don't know if that's the same kind of bridge
constructor. From looking at the video, that sounds
right. It's fascinating from an engineering perspective. You tweak the design and you can kind of see where sometimes they show you where the structural, like the thing will glow red if that's structurally under pressure, and you go, okay, well, I need to apply more, reinforcement there or whatever. It's really fun.
Well, adding Portal to that sounds
awesome.
Adding
Portal to that is next. That's some next level.
Yeah. No, it's officially Valve, so that's pretty cool.
Like all gamers, I'm desperate for anything even just adjacent to the Portal universe.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
It's been 6 years.
I wonder if
they've
got the voice and everything. I imagine.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
They must have it, right?
Yeah, it's been 6 years since Portal 2.
Oh, has it only been six? It feels longer.
Since 2? Oh man, it seems like
Portal 2
time.
Was just incredible.
So good.
I want to go back and play both. I want to go back and play Half-Life 2 because I haven't played it in years.
Mm.
And I would love to go back and play both the Portal games.
Portal 1 is so crazy because it's such a small experience and it's just so perfect. Like I feel like from top to bottom, it's just like it with the twist at the end and with just all the gameplay elements and the way that it rises in difficulty. It's so great.
I remember people complaining if that game was too short, and I was like, what? Like, it's short, but what's packed into that relatively short amount of time from a game design, game experience perspective was just absolutely staggering. And don't forget, it was part of the Orange Box.
Yeah.
So you got Team Fortress 2 and Half-Life 2 episode one or two. I can't remember which one came with the Orange Box, but that was a pretty great package.
Oh, definitely.
I want an Orange Box 2. That's
oh
what I want.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
And that's the sad thing is it's not happening. Like they're good. They got Steam.
They're just printing their own money with Steam. They don't even need to make games anymore.
Yeah, man, it's insane.
That's a great tragedy.
But then Portal 2 came out. It was just like, oh, let's take this amazing concept and just times 100, and adding the two characters were so great with Wheatley. Oh man.
Oh God, Wheatley. Yeah, fantastic.
And then another game release date here. IGN says that Assassin's Creed Rogue may be coming to PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, according to a recent listing on the Korean Game Rating Board. The listing spotted by Gamatsu shows Assassin's Creed Rogue HD was submitted to the board by Ubisoft and classified today on December 6th. As Gamatsu notes, several Italian retailers previously outed this potential remaster, listing Assassin's Creed Rogue HD with a March 15th, 2018 release date. Rogue was initially released in 2014 as the Xbox 360 and PS3 counterpart to the Xbox One and PS4 Assassin's Creed Unity. It later came to PC in early 2015.
Yeah, so Rogue wasn't like a core Assassin's Creed game, right? It was one of those spin-offs?
If I remember correctly, it was a spin-off that was pirate-themed, like Black Flag-themed that came out on the last gen.
But which one was Unity?
Unity
was that the
was
one
the
that
London.
Was like in Victorian England or something?
Yeah. But I still think because they just had the stuff from Black Flag, so they wanted to release something on PS3
okay.
and
got
360.
It,
let
it.
Us know when you're wrong if I'm wrong about that, but that sounds right to me. I know that this one, Rogue, didn't get the best reviews. I remember getting a lot of sixes, but I'm sure someone would be excited. And then Dragon's Crown Pro is coming to the West in spring 2018. Atlas announced that the new PS4 and PS4 Pro version of the game will cost $49.99 US dollars, and Dragon's Crown Pro will feature enhanced visuals, 4K support, a newly recorded soundtrack with a live orchestra, and English and Japanese audio options. Players that already own Dragon's Crown will have no problems jumping in, as online crossplay and cross-save compatibility will exist between the PS3 and Vita versions. In addition, all patches and features from the original game are included, as well as all the DLC. If you don't know, Dragon's Crown is a 4-player couch and online co-op beat 'em up set in a fantasy world, and it is awesome. Has a very cool art style. The idea of the entire soundtrack being redone with a live orchestra is great. 4K visuals. I'm all about this. Get hyped. And then final... Oh, no, two more. IGN also says Super Hot expansion announced. Time puzzling shooter Super Hot will get a brand new expansion titled Super Hot Mind Control Delete. It was revealed today by the Super Hot team. Although details are scarce and the reveal trailer does little more than whet the appetite, the game's Steam page does reveal a few things, including a 9 to 12 month release window and an early access beta on December 7th, 2018. So we can get in there pretty quickly.
What platforms is that?
It's on PC.
Okay.
Yeah, for Steam. In the biggest departure from the game's first installment, players will get to play as multiple characters with different abilities, while gameplay will now be more akin to the procedural generation of a roguelike. The expansion will be free to existing owners and priced the same as existing Superhot games. For those who are new to the franchise, no details have been released regarding whether this expansion will make its way onto consoles. Have you played Superhot?
Yeah, in VR in particular, it's fantastic.
Oh yeah, I've still never done the VR one. Well, oh my god,
you think Superhot's good in VR? It's one of those games that's like, it's not a gimmick. Like, you feel like, oh, okay, this is like the purest, this is the truest really? Version of Super Hot. It works really, really well.
Yeah, oh, I loved it on Xbox. And then finally, Ultimate Chicken Horse is finally coming to PS4 on December 12th, early 2018 for Xbox One and Switch. If you don't know, Ultimate Chicken Horse is this 2D platformer game. It's a multiplayer game.
Are you just making these up now?
Yeah, no. Ultimate Chicken Horse, it's a real thing. It's been on Steam for years. We played it at a Let's Play Live like 2 years ago, I want to say. It's a 2D, 4-player platformer, like competitive game where you have teams of two and it's kind of Mario Maker-esque, where every turn you add one element to the stage and there's a goal that you're trying to get to the end to. So you add an element and then your opponent will add an element and then it goes back to you and you add an element, and you're trying to make it hard for them to get to the end but help yourself get to the end.
Okay.
So it's cool. It's like it's Mario Maker mixed with like just New Super Mario Bros. Style fucking with your co-op partners.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's cool. And you can get it on PlayStation 4 very soon. And now it's time for reader mail, brought to you by Lisa and Omaha Steaks. Let me tell you all about this. You know, we've been talking about Lisa earlier. We talked about the whole mattress thing. Lisa mattresses are fantastic. Joey sleeps on them. She loves it. She was once very late to work because she couldn't wake up because she was having such a good snooze on that there Lisa mattress. Greg always talks about not wanting to go to the mattress stores because there's so much hullabaloo over there. You know, they're trying to sell you on all the stuff that you don't need. Lisa, they're coming to help you. Lisa mattress is 100% American made and delivered compressed in a box to your door. It is thoughtfully crafted with high quality materials to create what Lisa calls their universal adaptive feel. Its three foam layers provide support, pressure relief, and cooling that adapts to all body shapes, sizes, and sleeping styles. You get a 100-night trial. So if you don't like it, they'll come and take it back, which is really crazy because it comes in this box. You get the box, you open it up, it just goes, pah, and then the mattress just kind of comes out. If they were to come and get it, that seems like a lot of work.
What do they do with the mattress that you send back after 99 days of sleeping on it? I got it. Like, they can't resell that, right?
No, they probably recycle it somehow.
Yeah.
Man, figure it out. But yeah. Hey, not our problem. If you don't like it, you can just turn it back and they have to figure that out. Mattress costs thousands of dollars in the store, but Lisa starts at just $525. But you can get $100 off by going to lisa.com/kindoffunny and entering promo code kindoffunny with an exclamation mark. I don't know if that's right. I'm going to say it's not. Just promo code kind of funny. Lisa is LEESA.com/kindoffunny. Promo code kind of funny. And now let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how for only $49.99, you can get the family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter code KFGAMES in the search bar. 75% off. Now, Greg always talks about this, how he got this for his dad for Christmas, and it was a killer gift, so much so that his dad was like, you know what? I don't know what to get Greg for the next Christmas. So he also got him Omaha Steaks.
Wait, so this thing is usually $200? Is it 75? You're seeing get it for 50. It's 75% off. This box usually costs $200.
Yeah, you got a lot. You want to know what you're getting there?
Yeah, I do.
You got right now, Omaha Steaks is giving an exclusive saving just to the listeners. Everything you get for less than $50, two filet mignons, two top sirloins, two boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, four kielbasa sausages, four burgers, four potatoes au gratin, four caramel apple tartlets, one Omaha Steak seasoning packet, plus an additional four kielbasa sausages. You just got to go to omahasteaks.com, enter code KFGAMES in the search bar, and get 75% savings. It's the gift guaranteed to be a hit. It was for us an Extra Life when Greg made all the meats. So many meats.
Do you think any one person could eat the contents of that
Kevin
entire
Coelho.
Box?
Kevin Coelho would be up to the challenge.
You think he could?
Kevin? Yeah.
In one sitting? Or like over the course of like one 24-hour period?
24
I don't know.
Hours. Not in one sitting.
Not in one sitting.
Yeah. He just downs food.
I feel like that's premium content right there.
Yeah. We got to figure it out. You can help us. Go to omahasteaks.com.
I know this sounds like I'm shilling for you guys right now, but I might do it. I like, it sounds like a pretty good deal to me.
It's quality stuff. It really is.
$50 for all that meat?
$50, and you get a just box, and then it lasts.
Just a box of meat? Box of meat?
Box of meat, and it serves so many people. Like, we have 7 people here now, and like, we have more than enough.
The only thing I would change if I was in charge of Omaha Steaks is I would swap out the dessert for something else. The apple turnovers or whatever, they're probably not for me.
Not your favorite?
No. Maybe a different dessert, but everything else sounds great.
Yeah, well, check it out. Omaha Steaks. All right, let's get to the reading mail. Where do we want to start? Mitch says, hey, kind of funny. I've seen this topic come up a lot, with the most recent example being GameSpot's year in review videos of Microsoft and PlayStation, a heavy focus on old games. In what I thought was an amazing year for PlayStation, they were slammed for not having easy access to old games, while Microsoft received praise for backwards compatibility and upgrades to old games via the Xbox One X. To me, this is purely icing on the cake. Why do you think these features get so much attention? I'm personally much more interested in a new gaming experience and don't mind going back to a game if it's built from the ground up like the Crash Remaster. Are there any stats to see if Xbox players are really using backwards compatibility so much that they deserve this level of praise?
I remember recently there was a story, I think Wired or someone like it posted it, that suggested that they had done a deep dive into some numbers and found out that backwards compatibility is really not, you know, people always ask for it, but it's actually not highly used. But then I think there was like a story
was a Sony story.
They debunked that. Yeah. So I don't, who knows what the reality is.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got to guess, Microsoft are putting so many resources into upgrading these games and making them backwards compatible. I think Major Nelson posted something the other day, said like 150 mm-hmm. something games they had added to backwards yeah. compatible. I don't think they would be doing that if they weren't seeing the demand.
The results and the
they
demand.
Were just sitting there in the store unbought. Why keep going?
Yeah. I mean, I think that Microsoft, especially when you look at its first party lineup and how it's not as strong as it used to be in some cases, I think that a lot of this is bolstering what they have and creating a quality of life experience.
But do you want to go back and play like Crimson Skies and like old Xbox? Like OG Xbox games?
I mean, that sounds great to me, and Crimson Skies is fantastic. That was
actually a bad example, because of course Skies you want to play awesome. Crimson Skies.
Yeah, but a lot of the other ones, I mean, it's more about the option, and I think that's kind of what Mitch is getting at here, is like, is it really that big of a deal? And I think the answer is yeah, especially when the competitors don't offer that. Like PlayStation 4 has done a really bad job of giving people options to play the old catalog. I mean, even the PS3 was way better with that.
They have such a catalog as well. I mean, all those PS2 games, and it's vast.
So the PS2, they've done a good job with PS2 classics, but PS1 is just nowhere to be found, and that sucks. And being able to play PS3 games, you just can't do it.
The thing is, if you go back and look at PS1 and the N64 generation, I don't think those games are salvageable. Like you could go back and like put a layer of polish over them, but those games visually, I think they don't hold up.
Yeah.
The PS2, maybe PS1 games just look, it's just my taste.
They
look awful.
But
now.
Still, I mean, there's so many classics on there, like Final Fantasy VII. Well, I guess that is on PlayStation 4, but like, all, you know, all the Final Fantasies, and like, then they did the Crash Remaster and all that. I think that it's an important service to have. And I think that going forward, PlayStation, when the next system comes out, they will have some type of solution for this. But I think that Microsoft is pushing it so hard because that's what they have to push. And they know that they have a large catalog, and it just makes them sound really good when they can be like, oh, you can play hundreds of games, you know, that you already own. This one comes from your friend Nate. He says, hey, Kind of Funny Games Daily host, I hope this finds you well. I'm writing in to express a little frustration to you guys. I'm sick and tired of VR games being crapped on. Yesterday, you talked about the Justice League VR game, and subsequently, Andrea read a Push Square article detailing just how crappy the game is. This may be true, however, it seems game influencers and journalists only try and or talk about the piss poor examples of VR gaming like Justice League, Spider-Man, Ghostbusters, and now Justice League have all had cheap or free VR experiences that have been utter trash. This is put into even clearer focus when compared to the actually good VR games that no one seems to mention when talking about VR. I'm talking about games like The Invisible Hours, a Tacoma-style VR game, a murder mystery set in a mansion with a 4 to 5 hour-long story that unfolds around you in ways very reminiscent of Tacoma, or The Solus Project, a solid 10 to 15 hour open-world survival-like game, or Static, a puzzle game which uses VR in exceptionally creative ways. What about I Expect You to Die, a super stylish escape room-esque game? These are just a few off the top of my head examples of VR games done right that are moving the platform forward in interesting ways, but people keep glossing over them, and it's super infuriating to see this continuing to happen. Thanks for taking the time to read this. I hope I didn't fall on deaf ears. Have a good one, and best of luck to Andrea tomorrow night. Thank you for that. I think the thing with it is you just mentioned a lot of the kind of IP that people are familiar with. So people are going to be more excited about a Ghostbusters or Justice League or Spider-Man just because they're familiar. And they're like, oh, cool. What does the VR experience look like there? The reason I chose this question is because I wanted to highlight all these games. I haven't heard of any of them. And I want people that have PSVR or have Oculus or have any of the VR things to write in and let us know which VR games you think people are sleeping on, because a lot of these sound really cool.
Yeah, I've got the VR set up at home, and I've been a big proponent of VR for a long time. I remember when I first put on like the duct tape DK1, the very first prototype. I remember thinking, oh my God, this is it. This is the future. And we haven't seen that fully come to fruition yet. The technology's got a lot better. I would have said Bridge Crew, Star Trek Bridge Crew. Mm-hmm. I thought that was the first game, VR game that I played that really had me in there for like hours at a time. Usually after like 20, 30 minutes. And the games are designed this way, you know, because they know that people don't want to be in the headset for extended periods. Bridge Crew, I was in there for an extended period because, like, you're so there. Like, you really are on the bridge of the ship. And it's so immersive. And I think we're still very much in kind of the silent movie era of VR, like just trying to figure out how to use the tools, how to use the techniques, how to, you know, make these things work. And there are so many problems with disorientation, with mobility. Like, you know, what do you do with games where you move around? Are you on a rail? You know, do you teleport? All these different tricks and cheats that we're using to try and get past the inherent problems of VR. And it's far from a frictionless experience. It's expensive. Like, there have been times where, and just even after you've got the setup, like on a PC, like someone says, oh, there's some new VR thing you got to try. It's like, oh, but I got to go turn it all, the headset and the sensors always need to be recalibrated because I've accidentally moved it or something. It's like, it's a very, like, everything's got to be just right for you to enjoy VR. And so I think when, like, Oculus Go and they're just the self-contained headset that you just put on and you're there, when it becomes more frictionless, I think we'll see more buy-in. But for right now, we're still, you know, kind of breaking through a lot of these problems that we're having with VR.
Yeah. And in terms of why all the game journalists focus on the bad and not the good, I think it really just comes down to, like, there's layers of economics here where the barrier to entry to VR is so high, both from a cost perspective and a time perspective, that I feel like that limits the audience of it and of people reading articles about it and all that stuff. Then when you add on the fact that VR, the kind of like burst of excitement is gone right now because it was like the fresh new thing, and now it's kind of that thing's been around. So there's not like an excitement around it, so people aren't clicking on anything VR related. Then when you add on top of it, it's like unless somebody is really pushing these smaller indie games, they're not going to get the attention. You mentioned Tacoma, but it's like Tacoma is only talked about the way that it is because people were proponents for Gone Home and pushed that. We're like, this is something special. Everyone needs to play it. And I feel like there needs to be that for this, or else it's not going to happen. And they are only going to talk about Justice League because people will click on that article.
And there is way, way, way more bad stuff out there than good right now. And that's, again, it's part of the problem. Remember when CD-ROM first came out and it was like terrible, terrible CD-ROM games because it was new technology. We were trying to figure out how to make the best of it. And we didn't know. There was a lot of experimenting. And you got to go down a lot of blind alleys to figure, okay, that doesn't work. Let's try something else. And we're in that experimental phase with VR right now, and we are going to see a lot of failed experiments, but that's how you get to the good stuff. And I do believe that, give it, I think, 3 or 4 more years, the price will come down, the barrier will come down, we'll have wireless headsets in the living room that, you know, work with our Xbox or PlayStation brilliantly. And you know, the art form, we will have understood how to make good VR games better than we do right now. We'll get there, but we're living through kind of the shitty experimental period right now to get there.
Well, for the good games, I do want to give a couple shout outs here from your friend Nate. If you're interested and have VR capabilities and want to play these, he talks about The Invisible Hours, The Solus Project, Static, I Expect You to Die. So check those out and let us know what you think.
You were talking earlier on the previous show about Justin Roiland.
Mm-hmm.
You should have him on the show to talk about VR, because he's one of the biggest VR believers that I know. He's developing his own VR games, totally believes in it, and I think can speak very intelligently about it. There are people like that out there, the evangelists, who are going to push and put their own money into it and experiment and get it there. They will get there.
Sherbinator says, hi, Tim and Gary. With the Game Awards happening tomorrow, I wanted to get your opinion on this question. When voting for the game of the year, should you consider outside factors, or is it simply about the game? Does Zelda get a leg up because it helped launch the Switch? Does Horizon get knocked down a peg because it launched on the most sold console? Thanks for the nerdy news we need to know every single weekday.
No, to judge the game on its merits.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm trying to think, what would be an outside factor that would make it...
See, I don't think...
More or less eligible. I don't know.
What you're talking about here, the examples you give, I don't think that it launching the Switch needs to be brought into the conversation. And with Horizon, definitely, it being on the most sold console has nothing to do with it. To me, though, outside things of not just the game, it's questions that game brings. So, for example, for me, talking about Zelda and Mario, I think it's important to think about where that fits in that franchise. And, like, when I look at Mario Odyssey, as much as I love it, when I'm considering it for Game of the Year compared to something like Horizon that is this new, fresh thing, I think that needs to be taken into consideration. Where I ask myself, does this do something new for Mario? Does this make Mario a better experience, or is it making me feel things I haven't felt since Galaxy 2?
I think that is totally legitimate. You always kind of judge the games within kind of the broader context of what else is out there and how much did this move the needle, or was it just a very good iteration of what we've seen before? Again, I think a very good iteration of what we've seen before can still be Game of the Year. That can still be the best game. But in terms of like what platform it was on, or was it part of a launch cycle, or was this the best selling console? I don't consider those. Yeah. Would not consider those relevant factors.
I don't either. Don't make sense. And the final question for the day comes from CJ Vasquez. Hi, Tim and Gary. Long time, first time. Have you ever played a game that impacted how you feel about a whole genre? I played World of Warcraft since the end of 2006 and clocked over 500 days played. Since then, I've tried to get into games like Skyrim, Witcher 3, and Dragon Age, and I can't get into them, even though it used to be my favorite genre and I know the games are great. I quit WoW earlier this year, but I could still put over 8 hours a day into that game like it was nothing, but can't get into regular RPGs. So have you guys had...
No!
Just stop it! Stop the question!
That scared me.
It happened.
Here we go.
Oh my god!
We're gonna try live!
Oh my god, where did you get that?
Well, Nintendo sent it to me because I'm a big timing guy.
You son of a bitch. Have you tried the amiibo yet?
No.
Well, we have to try that too.
Fresh off the press.
What?
Did you bring your Switch? Where's the Switch?
What, do you expect me to eat these out of a mug?
What kind of barbarian
are you?
Jeez.
Where's my milk? You can't eat dry cereal.
That's how you're supposed to eat cereal.
No.
Greg is a monster.
Did you grow up in a cave?
I'm okay with the cup. We just need the milk.
You want some milk too?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, of course we want milk. And spoons. What the fuck? This is a civilized world that we live in. This is amazing, though. Look at this. So the amiibo, it's a scan here. The amiibo is right here.
Yeah, I want
to know what you get.
I didn't realize it was just called Super Mario cereal.
Do you have a Switch with Mario on it right now? I feel like we have to test the amiibo.
I do not have it with me.
We don't have one in the house right now?
No.
There's no Switch in this house?
Everyone has their own Switch, but I don't think they have them brought here.
So no Nintendo Switch.
We're
eating dry cereal out of a mug.
Yeah, let's get it. We got to
check it. You can unlock special content to power up your Super Mario Odyssey adventure. See, now that's more like it.
I eat my cereal like a man, like I'm out in the old west.
All right,
I'm traveling around. I ain't got time for milk.
Crazy.
Let's see, is Mario on here?
Who's this, Echo Gray?
Yeah.
You keep talking. Let the audio listeners know. Oh, look at it.
Of course Mario needs an update. It might be the cereal update.
Oh my god, cereal!
It could be the one that unlocks the cereal content.
Go for it. Oh, they're like Lucky Charms, but it's Mario.
Well, I mean, those are stars.
Okay, we got Cappy in there. We got
live.
The one up mushroom.
Little toadstools.
What's this little yellow little thing, though?
Spoons?
What
that's
is
a question
that?
Mark block.
Oh! Yeah, I guess it is. Oh, some of them look better than others. Oh my god! We're getting crazy here.
Oh my god, we can't update this game because you don't have an SD card in it.
God damn it, Cole.
Nintendo.
Did you bring your Switch?
All right.
I did not.
Oh, it's downloading now.
I did not.
Are we going to try this?
Yeah.
I'm going to try and get a couple of Mask Mac.
First look here.
You know what? It's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm in.
It's fruity. The marshmallow pieces have real fruit flavor.
Hmm. Yeah, you're right. It's like Fruity Pebbles mixed with Lucky Charms. What do you mean?
I don't like marshmallow sugar. I don't like Lucky Charms.
Fruity Pebbles level.
No. I'm not saying it's on the level. I'm saying it tastes like it's fruitier Lucky Charms.
But I would actually eat this cereal.
No?
Yeah. I usually don't like the ones that have the crappy kind of dried gummy marshmallow pieces. But these are good.
Some of these marshmallow pieces are looking a little worse for wear, but yeah.
Mm. Well, again, Greg, you're eating it dry. You're supposed to soak it in milk.
I'm like an old West cowboy, riding to my next homestead. I got my little cup.
Well, I gotta say, it's a hit. I'm giving it a thumbs up.
It's a hit. There's a whole bunch of games you can play. There's a Hungry Yoshi game.
Okay. Oh, Mario
Panic
coming
in the
up
Pipes.
Now.
Bowser's there, doing some stuff. It's fun for everybody.
We gotta try the amiibo.
I want to finish the question, because I don't want to be rude to CJ Vasquez here. But yeah, has a game ever affected a whole genre for you?
What does the amiibo do?
Tag it in.
My answer is yes. Fire Emblem. I did not like
you got another one then?
Tactical strategy games at all.
Played here that. We go.
Totally changed my life. That's one of my favorite genres in the whole world.
Okay. All right. Where do you, where's the amiibo sensor on this thing? Because I usually do it on the Pro Controller.
Isn't it the little, on the Joy-Con?
Is it? Right? Where do you do it? Is it like here?
Don't you need to go to an amiibo dude? I've never used an
amiibo. Oh, yeah, you have to go. You have to find the amiibo robot, right?
Mm.
Or.
I'm just going to eat the cereal.
And this is Cole Greg's game, right? He hasn't played that much of it.
Yeah, he's still in the starter world.
Yeah, then I think Joey's running yours for sure.
Ooh, I don't think I have. I'm not that much farther.
Really? Hold on.
But are you in any world?
I'm in the Toasterino.
Oh, then you're fine.
Okay. And he's got assist mode on as well. All of the dirty secrets are being revealed right now.
No. Cool Greg's got no dirty secrets.
Okay, let's try this. Do you have the... There is a way to bring up the amiibo. You don't need the amiibo droid. You can just bring up the... you can say, I want to do an amiibo. But I don't know how to do that off the top of my head.
I haven't had cereal in like 4 years.
4 years?
You're going to have to test the amiibo thing really another time because I'm not sure how to bring up the amiibo sensor. But I really want to know what you get. This must mean it's going to be in stores soon, not now.
It's a, you were talking about, you get the heart or you get coins.
Is that what it is?
You nailed it. Yeah, you nailed it on the show where you
bring it. Oh, so you found this out? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now it's time for Squad Up. My dude, Ali Polo, he needs some help. He says, hi everyone, Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, it's a fun game to play, but no casuals are playing it online, and I got sick of being hit by a 70 plus combo by pros. So if you enjoy playing Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite casually and want to help me learn how to play, add me on PSN. His username is Ali-Polo. He's on the PlayStation 4. And if you want to squad up, you can go to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and ask. And Greg will help you.
Not to disregard that previous question, I had a similar experience with World of Warcraft where I played that game to death and then afterwards was looking for the next MMO that could continue that addiction. And I tried, Old Republic and a bunch of games. Nothing ever really stuck with me because it was partly because I just wanted, it wasn't World of Warcraft and that's what I loved, yeah.
So now I'm going to go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong and see what we got wrong. Appreciate your interaction in the show. It helps keeps us honest.
I think I like this more than I like Lucky Charms.
I agree. I think so. Featuring power-up marshmallows. I don't feel particularly powered up.
Kebabs says, Assassin's Creed Unity was set during Revolutionary France.
Oh, okay.
Capitalist Pig said that it was Syndicate that was set in Victorian London.
That's right. Yeah. That makes sense. I don't know shit about Assassin's Creed.
And Blanket Fort says, to activate the amiibo, hold down right on the D-pad.
Aha.
And place the amiibo over the right Joy-Con stick.
Okay, let's do it live. Fuck it. We'll do it live. All right, over the right Joy-Con stick. So I'm going to hold that down.
Yeah, hold down right.
Okay.
Yeah, move it around. Get it good in there.
Nothing. It says right there, right? It's right there.
It says there, yeah.
Right Joy-Con stick. All right, this is not...
It just works.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Oh, you have to pull off the stick for it to work?
Now hold it right.
Oh, let's get both of these off here. God damn, these games. Okay. All right, so I'm going to hold that down.
Hold on, you got to hit your left and rights. So it knows we're doing this.
Is there a stand? Where's the kickstand on the back of this thing? Okay, all right, here we go. Let's put that
there.
What
it's like to be a parent on Christmas. You're trying to figure out.
Yeah. Okay, all right, now.
No, I'm going to hit A.
So I'm going to hold it. I got the amiibo up. Do it. Over the stick, over the right stick, the thumb stick. There it is.
There we go.
Oh!
We got a heart.
We got a heart.
Not even like one of the hearts that like.
But it wasn't a peach heart. It wasn't one that gave you six.
Lame.
So it's not even the really good
box
heart.
Box isn't worth it.
Man.
I mean, what
cereal,
do you
expect? Cereal.
You know, the. The prize that you got, was there ever been like a good prize in a box of cereal? Like, it's always been crappy, right?
Yeah.
So this is kind of in.
Those were awesome. That is
true. Oh, we just got one of those this week. We bought bought some Honey Nut Cheerios, and you got a Star Wars Last Jedi
color change.
There was a color changing spoon, and there's a whole bunch of different ones.
We got to do it.
Yeah, Honey Nut Cheerios.
We got to get it up. Tomorrow's host for the show will be me and Andy Cortez. It's sure to be a lot of fun. Gary, thank you very much for joining us.
Always
a
pleasure.
Wednesday. Until next time, I love you, and we will see you soon.